comment letters, or more particularly our feedback process. If you recall, we had three questions. How do we increase engagement in the feedback process from our underrepresented groups? How do we make the feedback more effective? And I've written here, ACCA, useful. Are there better ways of getting feedback than comment letters? And if so, what? And if you recall, I allocated for initial discussion those questions. So I am going to start with Anne in chairing group one, where I asked you to consider how do we increase engagement in the feedback process from underrepresented groups. So Anne, comments from your group.
Okay. So we distinguished two underrepresented groups. First of all, the users, and second, representatives from those countries where the language that they speak, their native language, is rather distant from the English language, and countries where constituents are not really familiar with private standard setting. So the first group is the user group, and we thought that maybe if we look at the issues on the agenda of the standard setter through the eyes of the investors, that might facilitate their participation in comment letter production. Because when investors read comment letters, they might not really immediately distinguish the issues that are important for them. They might not maybe immediately see the cost and benefits of it. So therefore, rewriting or looking at the discussion document on the agenda of the board and really try to look through it, through the eyes of the investors, might generate questions which are specific for the investors and might have engaged more. However, then there was a discussion in our group that if we develop questions specifically for the investor group, what about the other groups? Will they also require a specific treatment? Then we had a second group, which we considered underrepresented, like, for example, countries in constituents from countries in Africa, Latin America. And we were trying to analyze what are the reasons why they are underrepresented. And we thought, or we got comments in the group, that usually they are underrepresented because of lack of resources. So therefore, it might be useful to try another mechanism and, for example, try to work through the emerging markets group to capture really the vision of peoples or constituents in those countries. Important also for those countries where they have to respond to comment letters, read the documents put out by the EISB, is again a look at the language. These snapshots are interesting, but the language of the whole document, and especially the language of the questions that are asked. So particular attention to the fact that the questions are understandable. Perhaps that questions shouldn't be too broad, that people can answer whatever they like. And if the board would like very specific answers, that they also try to make sure that the questions they ask are also quite specific. So especially for those countries which are not really represented, the language used is also of importance. So these, I think, are the main elements which we discussed.
Thank you, Anne. I think that's very useful. Obviously, the two groups you identified, the users and those with a different, as you said, language distant from English, and offered some potential solutions there whilst acknowledging the difficulties with those. Jake, did your group consider this question at all, or did you not get to it? You're allowed to say you didn't get to it.
No, we got to it.
Okay.
I was just thinking whether I answered your closed question in a closed way or was more helpful.
Okay. If you got to it, please would you add further comments, Jake?
Sorry. We did get to this and we identified, I think, those groups. I think there was one other group we identified as potentially being underrepresented, which was actually smaller organisations. And I think the common factor is sometimes lack of resource to really give time and attention to discussion papers, EDs, whatever the document might be. We did have one sort of broader question around why do we think these groups are underrepresented? And I thought that was an interesting question that we only really started to unpick a little bit, which is, and we wondered whether there ought to be something around understanding what sort of representation we are actually seeking to get from the various different groups and really trying to understand whether there really is an issue with underrepresentation, because we weren't convinced that there necessarily was, but we had similar feelings but couldn't really identify the evidence.
Did you cover this? Sorry, I won't ask the closed question again. Yeah. What further comments did you have in relation to question one in terms of how do we increase engagement in the feedback process from underrepresented groups?
The only way would is to let them know, to do, to get on what we, an understanding of what we do, and to have them, their interest taken care of. What happened is generally we are out of reach. I think we perceive as out of reach. So what we should do is to get in touch and to be open to any potential interest party. If we don't do that, we will be seen as a kind of cluster and inaccessible. So we have to give the feeling and the conviction to outsiders that it's an open door. It's not only for people who are already, you know, the happy few. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have to do things in such a way as to reach out.
So let me ask you the question. When we put out an exposure draft or a discussion paper or whatever it may be and ask for submissions, that is put out to everybody. It is not closed. So what extra is it that you perceive needs to be done for it to be open for these underrepresented groups?
I think, you know, we are in a market. Everything we do in this world is done in an exposure in a way that it's attractive. If what we do is done in kind of very close circle, we will never have the reaction of everybody. We have to do, I think it's market, the word is market, we have to be market. Mm-hmm. But it is a matter of waiting what we get. With this, we cannot just bring people because they want a number. We have also to select people that can be actor of change. And maybe also what we should try to do is to really, the magic word is reach out. Mm-hmm. Let's try to see those who need us, who need this more than anybody, are very difficult to include.
Okay.
It's a matter of deciding to include them.
Gavin, your group then on this first question.
So I think consistent with what other people said. I think, first of all, as a general objective, increasing engagement in the feedback process is a good general objective, but along the lines Jake mentioned, actually the ISP should be clear as to what it's looking to get from the different types of constituents that it has at different points in the process. Ultimately, to increase participation, you need to make those constituents care. Why should they care? Why should they respond? And clearly, different things make different types of constituents care. So I think one comment that was made was, for example, the effects analysis absolutely is a good way in a non-technical context of illustrating what the impact is or might be of a standard. So really, I think maybe more targeted, more specific questions to different types of constituents. I know at one point the FASB, for example, did specific questions for investors. I'm not sure if the ISB has ever tried that. But fundamentally, it's why should someone care, and why should someone make the effort at a particular point in the process to respond? The other comment I'd make, I don't know if you're going to ask it, is there was absolutely no support whatsoever for anonymity in terms of responses. It was thought that one of the strengths of the ISP was its transparency and openness, and that actually wouldn't be consistent with that as a strength, and indeed wouldn't fundamentally increase engagement.
Okay. If we move on to question two, having summarised, if you like, or maybe I should summarise what I think I've heard there, that yes, there are some underrepresented groups which are probably the users and those where the lack of direct English and smaller organisations, and those that have tended not to be reached out to, so distant organisations. Some suggestions as to how that could be approached, however, also acknowledging, I think, from two groups around why is it that, or what is it that the board is trying to elicit from these groups, and making sure that if there is an understanding of why, and in fact that maybe there are different types of constituents and we need to make them care if we want the feedback, and why do we want the feedback at certain points in time. So it's understanding that analysis before, you know, thinking about those underrepresented groups before saying we need to do a lot more. Having said that, and I think that's what I heard there, Jake, grouped your question two, which was allocated to you, how do we make the feedback that we do get more effective, aka more useful?
So we started with the easy bullet on the slide, I think, which was bullet three, which basically said if we told people what we wanted by way of good, useful, effective feedback, would that be a good thing to do? I think there was universal support around our room for, yes, actually telling people what you're looking for by way of useful, effective feedback is definitely a good place to start. We talked a little bit about what that might look like. Might that be a document that's available each and every time someone responds? Might it be a short video produced by someone at the ISB articulating what would be a good quality response? There were, I think, a few ideas for that, but universal acceptance that telling people what you're looking for in a response is a good thing to do. We did note that if you did that, it might not encourage engagement, so there is maybe a trade-off that some people will look at that and think, well, that's an awful lot of effort. And therefore you might actually discourage certain groups or certain individuals from responding if they don't feel they're going to be able to respond in the way that you're looking for. And again, we spend a little bit of time about targeted questions, but that's come up before, so I won't waste this group's time by going back over the use of targeted questions for targeted groups. There was a little bit of anxiousness about some of the comments, I think, that have been made beforehand about if we get the same letter again and again and again and again, we tend to discard that or discredit that somewhat. And certainly one of our group made the point that if you are an individual investor in particular, who is taking time out of their day job to respond to a discussion paper or an ED, that is a big investment of time and resource for that individual. It's probably easier for that individual to pass their views through some form of group, an investor group, so respond through a group letter. But if you were looking for more engagement from individual investors, what you may get in return is a cut and paste copy letter of something that someone else has produced, just because of that time resource constraint that they have. Interestingly, slightly contradictory to what Gavin just said, in our group there was a recognition that anonymity at a particular point in time for particular commentators might be useful. It might enable certain commentators to actually give more specific data that might otherwise be potentially commercially sensitive, but might actually help inform the board's view, although certainly representatives from the ISB in our room noted that entities and other commentators had often found a way to give that feedback unofficially, even if it wasn't in the comment letter. So they didn't see that necessarily as a barrier, but there certainly it certainly was raised as a challenge that an anonymity may be useful in certain cases. I think we were also asked one specific bullet to consider was how do you get people to interact earlier? How do you get people to interact at the discussion paper rather than the exposure draft stage? And we thought that the best way to try and achieve that might be to try and make some of the discussion papers a little bit more practical, a little bit less theoretical. What is this actually going to mean? What am I going to see? How are things going to change? Almost trying to make make it more practical, but also make the language more accessible so that people can understand what does this mean for me. It can often feel, I think, a long way away and a bit too theoretical at the discussion paper stage for people to really think this is going to impact me, and therefore back to Gavin's question about why should I really care.
So in fact we went beyond just changing the language. We also explored whether or not the ISB might think about doing some slightly different things at an earlier point in the process. For example, you know, if there was a proposal that they were going to put forward or an idea, maybe actually spending a day with, you know, a preparer, doing a workshop, doing a walkthrough of what that transaction might look like, not only with like the finance team, but actually other relevant people as well. Now, of course, that would take time and investment and effort, and the ISB would have to be comfortable they were going to get some return on that investment. But I think to your point, anything that can be done earlier on in the process to show, if you like, the cause and the consequences of what's being put out there in a very practical sense might help alleviate some of that back-ending of feedback that you see.
Do you think, did both of those groups, your groups in terms of talking about that, think that that would help with, for instance, some of the groups that are only interested when it actually happens as opposed to partway through the process?
It's really difficult to say. We didn't think it would hurt, put it that way. I think that the key concern for that bit was the more theoretical it is and the less practical it is, people find it difficult to see about why, to understand why it really matters. I should note there was one final point that I will just put out there. One of the individuals in my room was a member of a body that also put out comment letters and discussion papers, and they noted that anything under 50 pages gets a really good take up. Anything over 50 pages, the level of comments and the level of interaction tends to drop off. And they noted they put out a plain simple language guide of about 10 pages, and that got a phenomenal uptake. I think the words that we used.
Okay. On that note, and seeing as you've come into this discussion already, Gavin, any further comments from your group in relation to how to make feedback more effective?
So I think, a couple of other comments. One, whether or not it was worth having some sort of live feedback mechanism throughout a comment period, basically by which, you know, in a public forum, people could get feedback about understanding of questions being asked and other relevant things. So I know informally those discussions happen, but whether or not there was a sort of, you know, a more formal way to do that and a more transparent way to do that. I think the other thing that we did also talk about was actually reinforcing the point that responses and good responses actually change the mind of the board and indeed the final requirements. That clearly is built in to some extent in terms of feedback statements and bases of conclusion, but there certainly was some discussion around whether or not more might be done around that to demonstrate to people that actually they had an impact.
And further comments from your group?
Yeah, we didn't discuss really in particular question two specifically, but we mentioned some elements that were also related to question two. And we were thinking about making the discussion paper and the exposure drafts that are put out for comment to make them slightly maybe more interactive or to maybe restructure them so that the important issues the EISB wants to get a view on are really highlighted in the comment letter, because at the moment the structure of the documents is more the same than the structure of a standard, like first we have the scope, the definition, measurement, recognition, disclosures, and maybe disclosure elements might sometimes be quite important. So we were thinking of making sure that those that would like to read the comment letter know that they don't have to respond to each question if they want to like a comment letter, but could focus on the elements that they find important. What we also were thinking about, well, some groups, even if you solicit them to write a comment letter, they will never write a comment letter. So that the EISB should think, well, what other means do we have to go to these groups, and that it's, in that case, a reasonable thing to do. So that maybe they have some people they can phone to present some views and to solicit some opinions. It could be that these persons are known to the outside world, so that they serve as a think tank. So, and it was also important that maybe not for all issues you need the full comment letter process. So that the EISB should always think, well, is a comment letter process, although it's in the due process, of course, due process handbook, is that the appropriate, efficient, and effective means to get the information we want to? So that they need to do some more creative and still transparent, of course, thinking around those mechanisms to use.
Aziz, your group, in terms of question two around how to make the feedback more effective?
We have been mainly dealing with this comment letter, which we should encourage, in because that way of giving to stakeholders out of our screen the feeling that they may be of use, some usefulness, and maybe we should encourage this form of communication because it might give some sort of reward to those who are not on board, who are not in our prime target. We have to, if there is one word, let's open up let's have people who can bring new ideas and make of our institution something really global. We have to use all line of communication that are available.
Okay. If there are no more comments on question two, perhaps move to question three. And Aziz and Gavin, put you up front. So Gavin, I might get you to respond in this one. And I think we've covered it a little bit in terms of some of the comments already, but are there better ways of getting feedback than comment letters? And if so, what? And I'm going to add, and how?
So I guess just standing back, there is a generational issue here. No one writes letters anymore unless you're the tax man asking for money, right? So if you think about the ISB and comment letters and thinking from a forward perspective, it sort of begs the question whether or not that's sustainable as we move forward anyway. And I know in earlier sessions we talked about, you know, a talent development and all of that stuff, and it's relevant from that perspective. I think it's also useful to think about a spectrum. And if you like, the spectrum is at one end, you've got questions which require a yes or no answer, so a bit like a popularity contest. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum, you have a comment letter, you know, which is full of analysis, well-formed arguments, etc. And thinking about the methods of obtaining feedback, then it's useful thinking about the pros and cons of those two ends of the spectrum and also what falls in between. So at the yes-no end, if you will, first of all, the barriers to entry, if you will, to getting someone to respond are obviously very low. However, therefore participation can be high. However, there is a relatively low quality, I guess, associated with those types of questions or feedback. Obviously, that sort of feedback is very relevant in terms of using social media platforms and technology. It can be dynamic, it can be very two-way. In a standard setting context, of course, it does carry risks. You don't necessarily know who's basically on the other end. However, we thought that, of course, that could be managed, and indeed is managed in many other organisations. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is comment letters. As I said, that typically you're looking for a fairly deep understanding, deep analysis, reasoned arguments. That is high quality, typically. You also have a good level of governance. So, you know, for me to send a comment letter, it needs to go through me or my CFO, etc. So that's gone through due process. So from the board's perspective, they sort of have some level of assurance about what they're getting. And I guess arguably it's probably most useful as well in terms of the board finalising standards. So I think the discussion we had as a group was actually, in terms of feedback, there's probably a role across that whole spectrum, depending upon the point in the process you are, the type of questions, the type of feedback you're looking for. Certainly in the short term, comment letters are going to remain a feature. But as I said, no one writes letters. That is worth thinking about as we move forward. From a due process perspective, we weren't sure whether or not at the moment, if you like, that yes-no end of the spectrum was permitted, facilitated or not. I think our view was, if it wasn't, from the due process handbook perspective, it should be, and indeed the ISB should have at their disposal a range of tools they could deploy depending upon what they were looking for.
And did you consider that even at one point in time...
Big support for Twitter, by the way. So
did you consider that at one point in time, in fact, both ends of the spectrum could be used so that you are soliciting information from two distinct and maybe the users, the groups that don't generally underrepresented groups as well?
Absolutely.
So that you're getting writing the detailed letter and you're getting me going yes to it, no.
It's a toolkit.
Okay. Aziz, further comments from you, your group?
The manipulation risk is there also, because as whoever you know, we can be used as a platform to defend maybe as when it comes to taxation or to government policies, that comment letter have been seen as a way to reach out, as I said earlier. It's but we have to give the technical platform for that. We have to also build out of that the kind of larger audience, because it seems to me that it works in the real world, because if it is used by all the organization trying to have the to have the sense of the word, to it's a way of getting open for me, and we should not we should balance the risk of the hardship to check, to verify authenticity, to manipulation, to what, and the effectiveness of reaching larger than the normal audience of the people that are among us. It's a way of getting some sort of legitimacy, because if we open up, of course we have to put in place the infrastructure to check that those who write are, you know, not in a using the credibility of this organization to do things that are not necessarily for the common public interest. But definitely it's something that we have to encourage, and I think I wrote that somewhere. We have really to try to have the audience with us, because number of click is some sort of new building of legitimacy. So do we have the capacity to use it in at the best interest of the organization? That one of the questions.
Anne.
Yes, to add to these other two members of the panel, what we discussed in the group was that for many or the majority of accounting standard setting issues, probably comment letters are still an appropriate way or the most appropriate way to get feedback. But we saw some stages before the comment letter and also afterwards. We thought, well, that social media could be used to instigate interest in participating in a comment letter on a certain topic. That the social media could also be used to form interest groups on discussing elements about a certain topic of the agenda of the EISB. And that then after that, I would say the high quality comment letter could be written by representatives of those groups. So that social media do not replace the comment letter, but that they create awareness of the problems. And maybe the EISB could also use the social media to advertise or to communicate the costs and benefits or the benefits in participating into a comment letter or making their views known on a certain agenda item. What we thought that, well, there was a question about surveys. We thought that surveys could be useful if from the comment letters a certain element came out that was a big issue for constituents, that then a survey could be circulated with respect to that issue only. Because at the moment there is a lot of fatigue with respect to surveys, so if you use surveys to solicit feedback, it should be really very specific questions and only a few questions. So I think that was what my group discussed in addition to what the others have already said.
Jake, additional from your group?
I'm struggling to find additional. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what we discussed was very similar. There's maybe two points here that I think is potentially additive. One was a question about whether it was possible to share some of the burden of categorisation and organisation that the ISB staff go through once they get the comment letters. Was there a way to encourage preparers to do some of that, or the person preparing the response is what I mean by preparers there? The other question we posed was, is there a way that technology, whether it's forms or whatever it is, improves the efficiency of the process that the ISB go through, even if what's produced is a form which is slightly less helpful for commentators? The ISB ought to maybe think about the cost benefit of that too.
Okay, fabulous. Is there any other comment that anyone would like to make before I attempt to summarise? Anne?
Yeah, there was one element in our group which was quite important, is that in order to engage really people into writing comment letters or share their views, it was also important that afterwards the staff would provide feedback on what they did with the comment letters. So kind of showing to constituents that have participated, like, this is what we've taken out of all the comment letters and this is what we've done with it in developing the standards.
So we also had a brief discussion about the independence around the review and summary of comment letters. And whilst I don't think anyone, so clearly the staff do that today, whilst I don't think anyone had any particularly substantive concerns, there was a question of perception, and there was a discussion around whether or not there was any value from some sort of, you know, assurance or QA activity that actually the comment summary or analysis actually was a fair reflection of the comments that had been submitted. Sue, the fact it was being raised demonstrates there's possibly an issue there, even if it's one of perception. And we absolutely had that discussion that if people felt that it wasn't a fair reflection, then, you know, the ISB probably would be the first people to hear about it. But I thought it was interesting, because I actually hadn't thought of it. I thought it was interesting that it was raised, and there was actually quite an active discussion about it.
I'm not meaning to be defensive. I'm just surprised. Given that all the comment letters are public and the summary is public. So there's a lot of, there'd be a huge risk for us to not have a honest summary of the papers.
So I think if every board member read every single comment letter, then, you know, then fine. I don't think that necessarily is always the case. There clearly is some level of reliance on the summary that the staff put together, rightly so, because otherwise why would you do it? So, and to be fair, I don't think we came to a conclusion necessarily that such a sort of QA or independence activity was required. I thought it was interesting, though, that the question was raised. So,
Jake or Aziz, anything extra that you would like to add? I note, Javier, you've got your flag up, so would you like to make a comment before I attempt to sum up what I think I've heard?
Yeah, thank you, Joanna. Yes, I think I would like to comment on a couple of things that have been already mentioned across the different groups. And I think as a user, I think that being very specific and more focused on the question, I think will help. It has been mentioned by across the groups already. That's one thing that I think might help to users to be more open to comment. And also, I think the second point related to this is the way how the questions are presented. I think that, and I don't know if that's the final answer, but something more like a questionnaire, a multiple choice kind of presentation with a question, I think also it might help a lot. I think that would be much less intimidating, and for most of my colleagues, that I have to say, not everyone is very educated and very, you know, very well informed about the standards, but definitely that might be something that might be more forthcoming for them to participate on the on the documents. So I think those are the two things I would like to mention that I heard across the different groups here.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Okay, where I think what I heard in summary of all of the questions rather than going through, because I think they are all interrelated, I think that one of the core things that has come out is to consider flexibility stroke creativity, and that not one size fits all around comment letters, and consider having a different range of tools, so the spectrum that Gavin talked about, to seek feedback so that we are getting appropriate feedback, appropriate engagement from the different types of stakeholders. And so that goes to the first questions around those underrepresented, and maybe they don't want to do it the same way as the detailed comment letter. So thinking about those different types, and so being flexible. So I think it's putting more onus on the board and the staff to think about the type of the way to get the feedback, and it may be multiple ways of getting the feedback, as Javier said, as much as anything else.
And for me, this is a sort of area where the board and the staff should absolutely feel free to experiment.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
See what works and what doesn't work, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so long as the due process handbook, Alan, allows the staff to be able to have this flexibility. So I really think that's the core of what I'm hearing. So we're conducting it for legitimacy purposes, as well as to actually get the feedback we need to write the standard. We are telling people what we want in whichever way it is, so who's going to engage the best way. So that to me was the core of what I heard. I thought there were some other secondary really valuable comments, which I think will come through, but that was the essence, I think, of what is there. And you're all nodding.
But that approach does take time and investment and resource from the board and the staff.
Yep.
So clearly you have to feel that you're going to get the return from it.
Yes.
But
yeah. So it's thinking about, are you going to get that cost-benefit return? And I have nearly pecking me in the back of the head to say about the resources. But we're not talking about inventing something. It's actually, perhaps, it's the thinking up front. So it's using the brain as opposed to a hell of a lot more resources. So I'm going to finish there on that. Hans, would you want to make any comments about what we've said there? He's smiling, so I feel confident in being able to ask him to do this as opposed to growling.
Joanne, before Hans...
Oh, sorry. Yep, Alan.
Before Hans, I mean, I think your point is about due process and effort and resources are both well taken. I think, I honestly think... it's interesting that this came out of a due process discussion, but I actually think the issue is more about creativity and initiative and resources than it is about due process. I don't think there's anything in the handbook now, but there certainly will not be anything in the handbook when we're done that would prevent any of these things from happening.
I like the idea of trying to find new ways to engage with our stakeholders. I think we could make use...
Hans, you need to speak closer to this
thing.
One
thing that might be really helpful is to help to work with electronic questionnaires that have a very low threshold to answer. And then even if people would think that is too restrictive, then they can always add a comment letter, and I'm sure they will. Many will do so. Of course, nowadays we already have a very varied way of approaching people. We approach investors in a different way than others. I think we will always need roundtables because, engaging in conversations can lead to a lot of interesting information. So I indeed think we need to continue pursuing varied ways of approaching our constituents and making better use of modern technology to do so. So I think what you have proposed is very valuable in that respect.
Sue, last word.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there's been some interesting ideas, and I think we could look at trying to do things like using surveys where it's more clear what the alternative answers might be, because I think sometimes people aren't quite sure what the alternatives really are when we say, do you agree or not, and why. So we could think a bit more about that. And I guess I struggle to think of black and white yes and no's, but I think there could be circumstances when we get to the why, we've probably got a good idea from our discussions we've already have of the likely things people might raise. So we could at least have a number listed and then an other box where if somebody's got something completely novel, they can always add an explanation. I think the thing to remember, though, because I think I can't remember who it was or more than one, talked about the importance of people understanding the ability to influence. And I think if I think of all of the occasions when I've really been influenced by something I've got from a comment letter process, it's tended to come from a very well thought out, well reasoned argument, and often something I hadn't ever thought about before. So it wouldn't have ever been anything I would have thought of to list if I'd done a survey. Mm. And so if people are thinking about being influencers, I think those arguments at the end of the day will be the things that will change the way we think. And so people shouldn't lose sight of that as well. But we can make it more accessible for more to be involved, I think.
Well, on that note, I am going to thank the four up here and everybody in the room for their input, and coming back to the theme that we've had around the due process and the stakeholder engagement, and that we're thinking about the legitimacy for all. And on that note, finish tonight.